I'll be honest with you, King Drain said, leading the way along an echoing corridor. I had my doubts. I didn't think it was going to work. The yellow glow from the flickering torch in his hand gleamed on an iron doorknob set in a rust-brown steel door. He gave it a twist and a shove. The door opened. The noise hit Miss White like a punch to the side of the head. She'd got used to a bit of a racket since she'd been living here, of course. The ground-shaking thump of the pile-driver, the shrill peck of pickaxe on rock, the harsh music of hammer on anvil, all amplified by the perfect acoustics of high vaulted chambers hewn from the living rock. This, however, was different. She clapped her hands to her ears and pressed till it started to hurt. But it didn't really make much difference. Too loud. The sound of thousands and thousands of dwarves, all yelling at each other at the tops of their voices. The crashing torrent of sound drowned out everything. But luckily, she could lip-read.
I was wrong,
Drain said, and he grinned. And you were right. The great hall of Mazipan looked very different now. Gone were the rows of stone benches and tables, where once the king and his subjects had swilled ale and gorged on red meat off the bone. In their place were 1,000 small, unroofed cubicles, in each of which sat a dwarf on a high three-legged stool. On the far side of the hall was a great, seething mass of queuing dwarves, each one holding a sack or crate. A string quartet perched incongruously on rickety chairs next to the massive steel chain that separated the queue from the rows of cubicles. They were soaring away with frantic energy at their fiddles, but not a note could be heard above the baying voices. From time to time, a furious-looking dwarf would leave a cubicle and come storming out, windmilling his sack round his head and bawling, and leave the hall through the gates of Dreary, whereupon the royal guards, who stood at the head of the queue, in full armour with swords drawn, would lower the chain and let another dwarf through. He would stomp along the rows of cubicles and disappear inside one of them. A few minutes later, he'd leave, white with rage, and the guards would lower the chain and let the next one through, and the process would be repeated. Drain beckoned and led the way to a high gallery where, for the past 3 ages, the king's minstrels had sat and filled the air with the plaintive sound of harp and lute. From there, Miss White could peer down into the roofless cubicles, and with the aid of her mini binoculars, she could just make out what the dwarves were shouting at each other. It was always the same. A dwarf would storm into the cubicle, shake out his sack onto the floor, and point at whatever happened to fall out. It might be a combination card jack and DVD tidy, or an easy clean ultrasonic lint remover, or a kitchen pal, graphite reinforced vegetable spiralizer. It didn't really seem to matter. The standing dwarf would point to it and yell, "It doesn't bloody work!" Whereupon the dwarf sitting on the stool would shrug and yell back, "You're not doing it right!" At which the standing dwarf would howl, "You bloody try it then!" Which would prompt the seated dwarf to grin, shake his head, and point out that items could only be exchanged or returned if brought back with their original shrink wrap intact. The next exchange of yells contorted the faces of both parties to the point where Miss White couldn't make out the exact words, but the general idea wasn't hard to grasp, particularly when they started hitting each other. But the seated dwarf had been issued with a stout iron cudgel, whereas the queuing dwarves had been thoroughly disarmed at the door. So that stage generally didn't last very long. And then the visitor would get up off the floor, stuff his item back in its sack, and storm off, roaring. When Miss White could endure no more, she jumped up and fled, with Drain trotting amiably after her. She just made it through the door. Drain closed it, and she was enfolded in beautiful, healing silence.
"Customer service," Drain said. "You were right. They've taken to it like ducks to water."
She leaned against the wall and breathed in and out slowly a dozen times. "They seem to have got the general idea," she conceded.
"And in an hour or so, they all change places," Drain went on. "That lot goes off shift. They all trot home and get the stuff they've just bought, and the next shift smacks them round the head and everybody's happy."
Miss White couldn't speak because of the ringing in her ears, but she raised an eyebrow.
"Well," Drain amended, "as happy as dwarves ever get. But so what? We've got full employment and a thriving economy. All those difficult buggers who used to mine coal and make steel are at this lark now, and they're yelling at each other instead of me. If only I'd known, I'd have done it years ago."
"Glad you're pleased," Miss White said, though whether the words actually came out, she couldn't be sure.
"About my cut, I was thinking, on balance, I'd like it in gold bars packed in crates. That won't take long to arrange, will it?"
Drain peered at her through the tiny gap between his eyelashes and moustache.
"Thinking of going somewhere?"
"Me?
Good Lord, no. Perish the thought."
"Just as well."
Drain scrutinised her again, and she looked away.
"This wouldn't be a good time for you to leave, so I'm glad you aren't considering it. Walk out on a good thing when it's just starting to get going, not me." She smiled at him. "Now, about the gold."
Drain turned and started to walk away.
Dwarves have short legs, but they can move them terribly quickly. She had to trot to keep up with him.
"Might be a bit of a problem there," he called back over his shoulder.
"Problem?"
"Hmm.
You see, I've bought lots of stuff from your friends recently, all paid for in gold."
"Yes, but you've sold it all."
"True."
Drain quickened his pace just a little.
"All of it. That's the point. My people are hard-working, thrifty folk, none more so in all the realms. But even so, they don't have enough gold coin to pay for all the things they want to buy."
"Tough. So?"
She saw the back of Drain's head shake from side to side.
"But I need to sell them all these things you've been bringing in so as to get my money back, so I can buy more."
"Slow down a minute,"
Miss White panted. He stopped and turned to face her.
"Look, it's obvious, isn't it? If they haven't got the money, they can't have the stuff, simple as that."
She got a hard, cold stare for that.
"That's not what you told me."
She opened her mouth, then closed it again.
"Come to think of it," he had a point.
"Yes, but credit," Drain said.
"You explained it to me. I said what a good idea it was. You said, yes, it's a brilliant idea. It's how everything's done where you come from.
I did say that, yes, but I didn't mean
you said, Drain went on, as though she hadn't spoken. Credit is where people want to buy things, but haven't got any money, and you want to sell them things because you're making a vast profit on every sale. So you let them pay you with pretend money. And when all the real money's been used up, you issue mountains and mountains of pretend money called quantitative easing.
Yes.
But I don't think you're quite ready for that yet. That's a couple of phases further down the line in terms of economic sophistication.
Drain shook his head.
Can't be bothered with a lot of pointless waiting around, he said. From now on, all the gold goes to pay for the stuff from your friends. Among ourselves, we use the pretend money. He grinned at her. This includes you. That's all right, isn't it? I mean, there isn't a problem, is there? Not something you neglected to tell me. No, absolutely not.
Drain looked at her for a very long time, and it gradually dawned on her that maybe he wasn't quite as stupid as she'd assumed him to be.
Splendid, he said. That sets my mind at rest.
Glad to hear it.
And you have no plans to go anywhere?
None at all.
A frying pan broad hand clouted her between the shoulder blades, bouncing all the breath out of her body.
That's the ticket, Drain said. You see, there's some people, no names, no pack drill, who've been trying to make me think you set all this up just to make a lot of money very quickly, and then you're going to load it all on a cart and scuttle back where you came from, and leave us to clear up the mess when it's all come unstuck.
But that's all just nonsense, isn't it?
Of course. Of course.
Drain repeated.
So, if anyone says anything like that to me ever again, I'll have his head cut off. And you'll get your cut in pretend money, like everybody else. That's all right, isn't it?
She beamed at him.
That's all I could possibly ask for, she said.
That's all right then.
His bear-like arm engulfed her shoulders, and her knees buckled under its weight.
Now, why don't you tell me a bit more about those leveraged derivative things you were talking about the other day?
Miss White went back to her room and looked around. There wasn't much to see. A few clothes, a spare pair of shoes, a mirror, her two books. Could she be bothered to pack? She decided she couldn't. Oh well. It had been fun. And she'd nearly got away with it. Served her right in a way for disregarding Rule 1. Screw up on Rule 1, and Rule 2 immediately comes into force. Rule 2 is, know when it's time to leave, and actually go a day earlier. She didn't anticipate any problems on that score. A quick stroll through the corridors, then nip smartly through the giant donut, which ought to bring her out in her friend's warehouse in New Jersey. Not her favourite place in the world, but at least it'd be her world. And she was pretty sure she wouldn't have to hang around there for very long. And after that? Well, cross that bridge when she came to it. Possibly even sell it to a gullible investor. She had her commission from the other end of the deal. More money than she could reasonably hope to spend in a lifetime, unless she started collecting nuclear submarines, and if that wasn't enough, the secret of the doughnut technology on its own was bound to be of interest to somebody after all. There are always possibilities. Instinctively, she glanced at the mirror for a quick stocktake. She was relieved to see that her working capital was basically intact, though possibly in need of a little downsizing in some sectors. She tucked a stray wisp of hair behind one ear, considered the angle of her nose and curve of her chin, gazed for a moment deep into her own eyes, which seemed to merge together into one eye and turn red.
"Bad luck," said the mirror. "For a moment there I thought you were going to pull it off."
She shrugged. "Too greedy," she said.
"I beg to differ," the mirror replied. "Your cut was not unreasonable. I think it was Rule 2 you offended against, not Rule 1.
"Like it matters," she said. "Anyway, that's enough of that." She looked at the mirror and frowned. "It's a shame you wouldn't work back where I came from. You could be worth good money."
"You're the one who's convinced I wouldn't work, not me."
She shook her head. "We've been through all this. Your magic. Magic doesn't work in my world."
"Magic is just technology that can't be explained yet."
"Nah, for a start, your power supply probably isn't compatible."
"Oh, come on,"
said the mirror. And for a moment she thought she was looking at her reflection grinning at her. Then the eye came back and said,
"Take me with you and find out."
"What have you got to lose?"
"If I work in your world, you'll be rich. If I don't, you'll have a perfectly serviceable mirror. It's not like you've got to worry about baggage allowances. And anyway, I only weigh 8 ounces.
She thought for a moment. "I'd take you with me," she said. "Except you're awfully keen to go." The eye twinkled at her.
"That makes you suspicious."
"Yes. If I had ulterior motives, I'd be acting just like you are now. And when it comes to ulterior motives, I wrote the book."
"Come off it," the eye said. "I'm your mirror. If you can't trust me, who can you trust?"
She smiled. "My mirror shows me me. I know me. And I wouldn't trust me any further than I could sneeze myself out of a blocked nostril." The eye widened a little.
"I see," it said. "Never kid a kidder is what you're saying. Well, that's fair enough. Suppose I level with you, and then you can make up your mind about whether to take me with you or not."
She hesitated, then nodded. "Go on then," she said. "What are you really up to?" The eye opened, like the jaws of a Venus flytrap, its lashes like the tendrils, red devouring pads on either side of the long yellow pupil, like the trap's thin hinge. Miss White caught her breath for a moment, then breathed out slowly.
"Ah," she said, "that." "Indeed," the eye said. "Seeing is believing, as we say in the ocular community." "Tell me," it went on, "would that deter you from doing business with me, provided that you were guaranteed to make a large amount of money?"
Miss White was silent for a long time. Then she said, "You know, I think it probably would."
"An obscenely large amount of money?" True, Miss White said. And it's tempting, I'm not denying it, but then I ask myself, in the sort of world that would inevitably result, what would there be to spend all that money on that could possibly be worth having?
Oh, you, the eye said. You're just an old worrywart, you are.
Maybe.
She picked up a lace mob cap she knew for sure she wouldn't be needing again, and draped it over the mirror, extinguishing the eye. Just for a split second, she hesitated. Then she grabbed the door handle and pulled it towards her. The door was dwarf-made, 3-ply oak, studded with square-headed nails. A dwarf could open and close it easily, but she wasn't quite that strong. She had to tug a bit. And so, when it opened, it came with a bit of a rush, and that caused a bit of a backdraft, just enough to flutter under the trailing hem of the mob cap and lift it for a fraction of a second, which was all it took. The hem floated down again, and the mirror was covered once more. Miss White stood in the doorway, chewing her lip. Then she reached out and picked up the mirror. "Oh, go on then," she said, and stuffed it into her pocket.